welcome to this week's episode of Drivers, Morning Reed's inside look into the golf industry from the people who are identifying the opportunities and creating them. I'm David Klein from Sports and Leisure Research Group, and this week's guest, Jason Becker of Golf Life Navigators, is certainly a perfect example of an industry driver in our minds. First, let me introduce John Last, president and founder of Sports and Leisure Research Group, the host of Drivers, to talk about some of our research findings related to today's conversation. John, how are you doing this morning?
I am good. Thanks, David. And we're so happy to have Jason with us. I think Jason and I have known each other for a couple of years. We were introduced by a mutual friend at a PGA show. And Jason had the brilliant idea that may have been welling in the back of my head for a long time, and he actually made it happen. And that is creating a really cutting edge business that really matches consumers with golf related real estate. We're going to talk about that in just quite a bit of detail in a moment. As you said, David, you know, we've been doing in our back to normal barometer a pretty regular pulsing of a number of different behaviors that are particularly impacted by the pandemic. And one thing that we'll talk to Jason about in just a bit, some of the work we've done for National Association of Realtors has really shown this distinct trend towards people moving and migrating into less densely populated areas. And I think that plays very nicely into what we're seeing in the golf industry. But before we get into that, Jason, why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about your background and the career arc you've taken and what kind of brought you to where you are today?
Sure, John, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here and chat with you some more about, you know, golf and real estate, what's happening in the market. So I'm a PGA professional by trade. I got my card back in 2007 and spent a number of years as the club pro at some various facilities in Florida. And then had the idea one day of this huge migration of baby boomers that are looking south, and wondered how in the world are they filtering 177 golf communities in Palm Beach County and 158 in Collier and Lee County. And as it turned out, there really wasn't any sort of resources available for these folks other than their peers and the internet. So I got together with some other tech guys who are also PGA professionals, and we built an algorithm of sorts that helps people filter search private club communities from Palm Beach, California to Hilton Head, South Carolina. So a pretty innovative approach to what the market was saying.
Really fascinating. And having seen the business scale over the last couple of years, it's quite impressive. So let's talk a little bit about the real estate market today. As I inferred in our work, you know, we are certainly seeing these national migration trends. What are the patterns you're seeing specific to the golf real estate and club communities market? What has really shifted, particularly in the last 13 months or so, given the pandemic?
Right. Pre-COVID, there was a trend that was almost negative of sorts for the private club industry, and that was, there was a trend of buyers who were saying that they did not want to live or intend to live inside the gates of a golf community. And for the golf industry, that's detrimental financially, because you capture rate is everything. You want people to live in the community to also be full golf members. And so at that time, it was around 50%. It was about a 50-50 split of those that wanted to live inside or outside the gates. Here today, 13 months later, that number has shifted all the way to 68% of people are saying, I want to live in the gates of a golf community now. So an 18% shift in 13 months, all really derived from the effects of COVID, our political landscape, you know, the civil unrest that we had last year. People want to be in that safe, secured, and controlled environment. And so it was a positive thing for the gated golf communities, to say the least.
You know, you mentioned a word that's really critical to us, as we've been seeing in the barometer, and that's control. I've often, and just recently, have spoken at a number of conferences about so much of what has fueled this upswing and surge in golf participation is that, obviously, here's an activity that is accessible and provides that sense of control. Certainly, you know, is very much part and parcel to what we obviously are seeing in the real estate space. So I want to talk a little bit. I mean, one of the things that fascinates me about what Golf Life Navigators offers is just, I think you used to call it, what was it, Match.com meets Zillow? Is that the way you define it?
Yeah, Golf Magazine called us eHarmony meets Zillow for golf.
eHarmony, okay. So, but it's really it's a brilliant way to describe what you're doing, because, you know, consumers, people who are looking to find their golf club community, answer a number of different questions, and then, you know, this algorithm kind of presents them with a number of different options for them to consider. Without disclosing anything proprietary, tell me a little bit about the algorithm and what are some of the key drivers that really help the system make the right recommendations for people that are looking for their community.
Yeah, the ProGuide questionnaire is what we call it. It's the survey, if you will, or the questionnaire that someone would fill out on our website. It's free for consumers to use, and it takes about 15 minutes to get through. The questions are very granular, and we do that for a number of reasons. Primarily, we want people to really think through what is motivating them to buy a golf membership and a golf home to begin with, outside of just the amenities. Is it about more physical activity, socialization? There's all these factors go into that. And the algorithm kind of looks at not only price points and location and amenities desired and filters the options that way, but when a club can connect with a consumer and understand what's motivating them, and they can establish that connection of, okay, at our club, we have a wine tasting club that meets every third Thursday of the month. And you've indicated on your questionnaire that wine is really important to you and the socialization impact. You would love this club. And so those little granular things outside of the golf course itself is really what makes the matches so relevant, not for the consumer, but as a club official, you want to have members that are meant for the club and to hold off on attrition rates and prevent unhappy members in the future.
So the club is obviously providing kind of their profile as well, and that helps create that match.
Yes, sir. So clubs put their data in to the back end of the algorithm. Consumers put theirs into the front, just like a dating website would work, and matches occur instantly through the technology. So we basically said, okay, if you can take 13 to 15 minutes and filter through the options and narrow it down to 6 to 8 clubs, you would save an abundance of time and, you know, money if you're a consumer coming to a market like Palm Beach County and going right to the clubs that you know are going to fit your basic desires.
Fascinating. Really, really great use of data in ways that research has certainly supplied, but this actually has, you know, an added layer of actionability to it. Mm-hmm. So with that vantage point, you know, obviously the volume of people that have used the system, I forget the actual number, but it's pretty substantial from what I most recently read. What are some of the trends you're looking at? What's kind of changed, if anything, in recent years in terms of the more popular amenities and cultural fits? Has there been a shift that you've been privy to in the last few years?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's funny, just even in the last 24 months, you're seeing more non-male users use the platform. So more female involvement and more involvement between spouses. So they're sitting down together, looking through this. Even if the spouse might not play golf or think very highly of it, the amenity packages and the cultural, and is this going to be family friendly, are all important things. So to have those as part of the algorithm are obviously help both genders. But, you know, in terms of trends, it's amazing. You know, we have a crystal ball of sorts to see what the buyers want 6 to 9 months from now. And so for a club, you can posture for that. Like, you know, the practice facility is the number one ranked golf amenity that buyers want. And so if I'm on a board of a club and we're strategically planning, you know, we want to invest capital into that asset because we know it's so important to buyers.
It's interesting you mentioned practice facilities in our annual trend watch work that we do for the American Society of Golf Course Architects. That emerged to the top this year as well as to what architects are being asked to do to design those. What about in terms of some of the programming and the non-golf specific amenities? Certainly with COVID and this need to kind of create these safe space communities, you know, we've always talked and often talked about the club as an oasis. Any insights that you've gotten from a direct practical standpoint as to how these facilities are adapting to meet those particular needs? Is that consistent with what your base of folks are looking at?
Oh, yeah. Physical activity and just being outside in general during COVID was so important to buyers. The clubs really adapted to that and started offering, you know, additional programs that were outside, whether it was outside yoga or Pilates or whatnot. But, you know, health and wellness, 50% of people that are going to buy a golf membership will base their decision on whether they join that club on the health amenities. So 1 out of every 2 buyers coming in has that in the back of their mind. It's going to be important for the club to showcase those amenities and have programs already in place whether it's outside or inside going forward. But between that, the food and beverage experience, something that might actually surprise you, John, we were just looking at the data a couple weeks ago, and in this first quarter, formal dining is making a comeback in terms of popularity. And we believe it's because people have been secluded for the last year, and it'd be nice to go sit down somewhere nice at the club and have a nice meal.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that pent-up demand we're seeing across a number of different verticals that we've been looking at consistently as well.
Jason, when you say that clubs are reacting to that, is that data that exists on your dashboard for them? Are you consulting them with them, or are they getting that information from some other sources?
No, it comes from me in our team. Basically, we put reports together every quarter, and we'll send it out to all the industry leaders. John's on that list, general managers across the Sun Belt. So that way they can use it to their advantage when they're meeting with GMs. And then for our clubs that are subscribed to what we call our feature club program, we have more of sending them data and dashboards on specific reports that they might be looking for.
Absolutely cool stuff. As a data guy, as a research guy, you have definitely hit on something that the industry has needed for a long time. I'm thrilled that you were able to join us today and give our listeners a little bit of an insight into what you're doing. And thanks again.
Jason, how do people get in touch with you? How do our listeners get in touch with you the best way?
Yeah, golflifenavigators.com, David. That's the easiest way. There's a ton of different information on the website along with the algorithm, which is free of use.
Excellent. Thank you all for that. And please check it out. We appreciate your listening, and we will see you in our next episode of Drivers.